Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And a pleasant good evening to you, everyone. Mike Haas here in the studio. On a big night here on a Tuesday, it is the Saints Hour. We'll be talking, of course, with Saints Executive Vice President and General Manager Mickey Loomis. A little later, the great Dane Morton Anderson will join us. Also, David Hawthorne, a former Saints linebacker who played at TCU. Certainly, we'll have a lot of insight as to what the Saints are dealing with right now at TCU. And he's still in that area with a bunch of restaurants and food trucks. But let's begin, of course, with Saints General Manager and Executive Vice President Mickey Loomis. And Mickey, it's been a couple of days, and I know you guys immediately put the game away and put it aside and turned to Carolina. But just give me some initial kind of reactions to where you watched the game on Sunday and kind of what it was like for that 3 hours.
Yeah, Mike, first of all, it's good to be with you. Before I get to that question, though, I do want to mention a group of us from the personnel department actually went to one of David Hawthorne's restaurants in Fort Worth, and it was real enjoyable. So
not just Q,
you're having him on.
They're called Not Just Q, right?
Well, he's got that. I think he's got a place called Dirty Bones.
I was going to ask him. I said, I assume that you're feeding this team a bunch of barbecue out there. So I wasn't sure. I'm glad you guys went and visited.
Well, we went there. He didn't happen to be there, so we just kind of snuck in and snuck out. But we had a great time. And David's one of my all time favorite guys. So I'm excited that you're having him on. Now, in terms of the game, yes, obviously we're excited to win. Number one. And I think we were all a little caught off guard by having a game that went, as well as it did. You know, sometimes we've been in those games, we've been on both sides of those games, where, everything's going right or everything's going wrong, and it kind of snowballs on you sometimes. And I think that was the case here. We played well. We got a couple breaks, particularly, when it's 17-3 and they're marching down for a score and we get some pressure on the quarterback and the ball gets away from him and Paulson makes the pick. I thought that was a real turning point of the game. And then a couple other things happened, obviously, that went our way. So we're excited to have won, but our focus right now is on the Carolina Panthers.
Of course it is, as it should be. So let me jump ahead two games after that. And that is certainly today, the New Orleans Saints and the Pelicans, with another Gulf Coast Renewal Fund and more money to really help out everybody in Louisiana that's struggling. And this money goes to a lot of the local nonprofits to get into people's hands as fast as possible. And then, secondarily, as an organization, you're trying to do all that you can for the people of Louisiana. And you're right, your focus is on Carolina and then New England. But somewhere it's that October 3rd game with the Giants, because that's going to be like a homecoming and certainly everything pointing to that day. And so I guess talk initially about the Gulf Coast Renewal Fund and really the impact that you guys want to have about with October 3rd.
Yeah, I think, first of all, Mrs. Benson and Mr. Benson before her, I always felt like they're very generous. And they always answer the call in times of need. And, one thing that's always impressed me about the things that she does is she immediately tries to do things that have an immediate impact, in the area and on individuals. And so I think, obviously, the Gulf Coast is taking the brunt of this. And I think it's in the hands of people that can make an immediate impact. As a football team, look, our number one goal is to win games, right? And I think the best thing that we can do is perform well. And I've seen that. We've seen it historically, how that impacts our community psychologically. And so that's what our main focus is to prepare and play well on each Sunday. And obviously, a game, was it 3 weeks from now against the Giants will be pretty exciting.
And that was something I was impressed, and I've been impressed, and I'm sure you have as well, with Jameis Winston, irrespective of his play at quarterback, which was outstanding, of how he's kind of handled this situation. And he's not it's not his first time, but just how he is handled, with everything going on pre-Packers, to kind of really say, hey, Louisiana, jump on our backs. We will represent you. We will help kind of lead the way. I just thought it was so impressive, and I've already been enormously impressed with him off the field as well as on.
Yeah, I think we have a number of guys like that. We've had guys on our team that have been in the community for a long time and have done a lot of great things. And obviously when something like this happens, they answer the bell. And I think it speaks to the character of the team that we have and the players that we have. I couldn't be more proud of the way our guys respond in times of need.
So certainly we've talked a little, since you have been in this about the adversity you guys have faced. And I know you can't talk about it at length, but just, because of it's a very fluid situation and because of HIPAA and other things, what is whatever you can say about the situation with COVID and your assistant coaches?
Yeah, I really, obviously we've got a few cases. There's really nothing I can say, Mike. That for lots of reasons, we keep that in house and we'll deal with it accordingly. Look, we're not the first team that has had some cases and had to, adjust and deal with that. And I'm sure we won't be the last.
It's just business as usual, right? I mean, it's all because the protocols are already in place, period. You just follow the protocols. It's not like you have to do anything per se.
Yeah, well, there's some enhanced protocols when you have cases,
right?
And some things,
right,
that we adjust to. But look, I think we're pretty good at adjusting to adversity. And I think we have a head coach in particular that is really good at adjusting to adversity and doing a good job of taking adversity and turning into a positive. So we'll handle it.
Today was a day off of the players, correct? And then yesterday you guys worked out a bunch of players. I don't know if you're able to say it. He's already tweeted it. Speaking of Kenny Stills, and got a picture of his jersey number 12. I mean, what can you say about the Kenny Stills situation?
Yeah, look, it's we did work out some guys yesterday and today, and look, that'll happen every week. We do that every week, and look, we manage our roster relative to, injuries that we have or particular needs that we have or, particular opponents at times. So it's just the ongoing business of the NFL. We're not the only team that's done that. And it's look, we're just trying to put the best team on the field on any Sunday.
So there's nothing. There's nothing official. That's all I was really, kind of getting at. Nothing official to say on that.
Yeah, we'll have an announcement about that soon.
I get it. I'm with you. I appreciate it. Saints General Manager, Executive Vice President Mickey Loomis on the line with us tonight. Welcome to the Saints Hour. We will have more coming up. I'm Mike Haas, Voice of the Saints on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. And welcome back, Mike Haas, along with Saints Executive Vice President and General Manager Mickey Loomis. Post victory over the Packers, getting ready for the Carolina Panthers, who were 1-0, beat the New York Jets on Sunday in Carolina. And Mickey, I promise I won't talk about this ad nauseum week after week, but I want to learn more about the process and maybe educate a little bit, because it's so different than it was maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And that's kind of the practice squad moving to game day, active rosters. And I don't want to get too deep into the weeds on this, but, as kind of, if I broad based it, And so basically, instead of, you can now have 48 guys on your active roster on game day. And the day before the game, you can bring two practice squad players up to your active roster, as long as you do it before a certain amount of time on Saturday, to your active roster. And then right after the game, they revert back to practice squad. You don't, you can't lose them, but you can only do that a couple of times, you know, before they have to go through waivers. But I guess just this, and it's, you know, 16 players on the practice squad, you know, six can have, you know, unlimited seasons. There's, I don't want to get too deep, but I mean, just overall, it feels like you and this organization has more flexibility, either COVID or whatever, Saturday and Sunday, to get to where you want to be on that active roster.
Yes, Mike, look, you actually did a pretty good job there. Look,
don't sound so
COVID,
surprised,
before,
Mickey.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised at all. Before the COVID circumstances of a year ago, you know, the new CBA expanded the practice squad and contemplated having a couple of guys that were veteran players that could be on the practice squad, you know, as opposed to just having younger players that were less experienced. Because of COVID, look, the union and the league were able to negotiate an expansion in order to provide us with some roster flexibility, to provide us really an expanded roster to cover for cases where you did have some players that were down because of COVID. So that went to 16, just as you said. We now have six veteran players available to be on that practice squad. And then each week, you said it exactly right, we can activate two players up to the 53-man roster, which would give us effectively 55. And then on Sunday, we have to deactivate seven if we have 55 and five if we have 53. So, and each, you know, we can do two a week. We can also only do it twice per player before you have to put them on waivers. And then, look, if you do have somebody on your active roster that is, gets put on reserve COVID, you get an additional call-up for that. So I think it's a great tool for, you know, for teams, particularly when you have 17 games and, you know, we deal with the injuries. So between that and having a reserve injured category where you can designate a player for return after 3 weeks, it just gives us better roster flexibility and I think ultimately a better product on the field.
So the question is, and I know there's a CBA involved in this, but we've seen so many things kind of that came with COVID that, you know, I mean, you go back to 2001 and 9/11, things that happened post that are now just a part of our lives. Well, do you think some of this, a portion of this, none of this continues on forward, even though maybe that's not COVID related, just because they've worked out?
I think, look, I think ultimately we're going to find out that there's a number of these things that have been really good for the game and good for the players, good for the teams, and I think they will continue. And you know, I probably wouldn't want to get into the list of the specific things, but I think a lot of the items we've just talked about has been good both for players and for teams, and most importantly for the product on the field. And so I would expect those to continue, maybe not in exactly in its current form, but pretty close.
I don't want to, you know, certainly it's a very, you guys have been through so much, but the news about Paris Harrelson, I mean, so young, that came out yesterday, must have just been, you know, just devastating.
Well, we've had two of those in the last, you know, couple of weeks. David Patton, who is just a spectacular guy. Both these guys are just spectacular people and great teammates, great representatives of the organization when they were with us. And it's just a blow. You know, it's hard to describe when you have someone that you know has been part of your organization and been contributors. Big contributors and such great people, and you just feel for, you know, for the family, and that's tough to deal with.
It's a life perspective, right? I mean, it's just kind of, you know, we all, it just puts everything always instantly slaps people right back into perspective.
Yeah, it sure does. It absolutely does.
So, how, as we get into, from, if you think back to, gosh, what seems like a long time ago now, you know, the post-Arizona Dallas, now TCU, and you know this week if TCU is it difficult to stay in the routine or easier now? I mean the players must almost feel like a little tightened up, or they can't do a lot of things like it would be in a normal training camp. So is it easier or harder to kind of stay in this routine?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think the main thing is to get a routine, you know, get something that you stay with. You try to make it as close to the routine as you would have if we were, you know, back in Metairie at our practice facility. It can't be exactly like that, but we have developed a routine, and I think Sean's done a great job of adjusting the schedule where it needed to be. And obviously the results on the field showed last weekend, and look, we just need to repeat that.
Anything specific about Carolina? I mean, it always seems, you know, I'm not going to bang on the NFL schedule, but it feels like we have played Carolina in September, and then we play them late January, you know, end of the season. This year, it's January 2nd. It's January 2nd. It's not even the last game of the year. It's the Atlanta game is the last game of the year. But these are always, you know, they got the Falcons at Tampa. Falcons 0-1, Tampa's 1-1. Somebody's going to get a loss there. And you guys, you know, all NFC South this weekend. So this is typically where you guys have done very well, swept them the last 2 years. So this, you know, as always, a division game, very important.
Yeah, and look, it does feel like every year we play Carolina early in the season, and then we play them either, week 17 or in this case, week 18. Look, so one of the consequences of that is that it feels like you're playing two different teams because, you know, teams don't look the same early in the season as they do late, and that can be good or bad. But look, it's a division game, and no matter what the records are, there's just a lot to that. There's more at stake. There's familiarity. There's all the things that happen that make these games close. And look, we've had a lot of games with Carolina that came down to the last possession, and I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case again.
Very well said. Also, we've had a few games with them at the end where they don't mean a lot because the Saints have already clinched certain things. So there's good things abound. And so, Mickey, as always, I appreciate your time. I know it's a lot going on there in Fort Worth, and we appreciate your time tonight, and we look forward to seeing you this week and look forward to seeing you in Charlotte as well.
Absolutely, Mike. Take care.
All right. Thank you, Saints Executive Vice President and General Manager Mickey Loomis, talking about what it's been like for the Saints there in Fort Worth and what is coming up this weekend against Carolina. We will delve a little deeper into the Panthers when we come back here on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. And welcome back to the Saints Hour. Mike Haas here. We just spoke with Saints Executive Vice President and General Manager Mickey Loomis. A little later, we will have the great Dane Morton Anderson, also former Saints player David Hawthorne, who played at TCU, where the Saints are now. And now he's got some restaurants and some food trucks there. So we look forward to talking to him a little later in the show. And if you missed what Mickey had talked about earlier, he did talk briefly and confirm that, of course, the Saints, which has been in the news, have had some COVID cases and that they are just going through what is expected and what is called for, the enhanced protocols, but that, quote, we will handle it as they head towards Charlotte and this next game with the Panthers. And so also we talked about the latest round of money that the Saints and Pelicans have donated to the Gulf Coast Renewal Fund. What I failed to do was also mention that if you are out there and want to help in some way, you can, and there's many ways to do so. NewOrleansSaints.com/Hurricane Ida or Pelicans.com/Hurricane Ida, as the team really, you know, focuses on Carolina and New England while the region kind of looks at, you know, that October 3rd New York Giants game and what we hope and pray will be right here in the Caesars Superdome and kind of have, you know, get this season off after a 3-0 start. That would be perfect, right? 3-0 start, come back, kind of let go 6, you know, 2-0 start, came back to open the dome with the Falcons, October 3rd against the Giants, that we hope and we think everything pointing in the direction that it will be right here. And certainly the Panthers, they beat the Jets on Sunday. Not surprisingly, they just decided to say, okay, here, Christian McCaffrey, we're going to give you the ball every time, and you beat them, and he did. 21 attempts rushing, 95 yards, 4.7 yards a carry. He was targeted 9 other times receiving. He caught all 9 for 89 yards, 9.9 yards. No touchdowns, but certainly the Panthers don't hide it very well, and it is going to be the Christian McCaffrey show. And some other players and of note and coaches, of course, the Panthers offensive coordinator Joe Brady was with the Saints in 2017 and 18 before he became the OC up at LSU in 2019 to that national title. Former Saint tight end Dan Arnold, who is now with the Panthers, caught at least one pass last week. J.C. Horn, the son of former Saint Joe Horn, is with the Panthers, had a couple of good plays. I've been watching some of their game with the Jets already. I'm not quite through the first half. And as we talked about with Mickey, I mean, it's like, gosh, it's Panthers in September, Panthers on January 2nd. But the good part is at least it's not the last game of the year. So the Panthers will be at home on January 2nd. Then the Saints go to Atlanta on January 9th. So it'll take a little bit of getting used to the calendar in this a 17-game season. The Panthers last week, when you look at some of their numbers, you go, wow, this team won? The Panthers were 4 of 14 on third down, 28%. Now the Jets were 4 of 13 for 30%. The Panthers were, and this was a big deal in the Saints-Packers game, which was the red zone and goal to go, where the Saints were 4 of 4 red zone, 3 of 3 goal to go, 7 of 7, 100%, can't get any better than that. The Panthers were 1 of 4 in the red zone, 25%, 1 of 2 goal to go for 20%, yet came out on top, of this game. There were a lot of punts early on in this game, but Panthers win it, so they go 1-0 and take on the Saints this weekend. I mentioned Atlanta will be in Tampa. One of the other things I thought was interesting from really just looking at these two teams from last year, the Panthers were 5-11. 5-11, yet they were +1 in the turnover margin. You don't see that too often out of 5-11 teams. It's second year for their head coach, Matt Rhule. They also had more. They did better than the Saints passing. The Saints were 234 yards a game passing, and the Panthers had 243 yards passing. Again, you don't see that often for a 5-11 team, but what happens is you get behind, and thus you throw it more. Lots more coming your way. We're talking to the great Dane, Morton Anderson. He only played in 382 games in the NFL, still a record. We'll talk to Morton coming up, as well as David Hawthorne. But first, we will let the stations identify themselves. You are listening to the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. Thank you very much. Welcome back to the Saints Hour. We're going to talk to Morton Anderson as well as David Hawthorne a little later. Both former Saints. I do want to mention that I just saw here on the Odyssey app, former Saint punter Thomas Morstead has found a new team. The New York Jets have signed the former punter, working him out today. That's according to NFL Network's Tom Pelissero. The Jets were in need of a punter. Theirs got hurt. He was going to be out a month. So Morstead, 35 years old, just a super, super classy guy who spent his entire 12 years here with the Saints, earned the Pro Bowl in 2012. He'll be going to the Jets and reunited with Sheldon Rankins and Justin Hardee. Wish him all the best. The Saints don't play the Jets until December 12th, so we'll wait and see. But certainly I bet when Morstead gets there, it'll be very tough to unseat him. He's a quality kicker. And from that to special teams players never retiring, what a perfect segue into Morton Anderson, my good friend. Morton, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, thanks. It's a good, always a good week when the Saints win, and especially the way they did it against Green Bay and Jacksonville was unbelievable.
So you and the family still in Atlanta, right? Did you watch some of the game, or what is your role kind of on weekends now besides husband duties?
Yeah, I do watch because I do I have a podcast once a week, Great Dane Nation, so I got to keep up with the games. We talk a lot of NFL on my show, and we have a lot of guests, NFL guys on, Hall of Famers, and just had the commissioner on, so we, I'm trying to be informed and educated as much as possible.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, I'm in the same boat, and there are so many things about this Saints football team we just didn't know. We're not saying they're bad. We weren't saying they were good, but they didn't have a lot of guys who had done it. Marquez Callaway, Deontay Harris, Juwan Johnson, those three guys collectively had one NFL touchdown from last year. One, right? So you didn't know. Yeah. We'd seen them in camp, and we go, wow, they look special, but they hadn't done it. And so to play the way they did, and certainly with Jameis, five touchdowns, 148 yards. I mean, if you use the word surprising or startling, then it's like a negative towards the team, but it was kind of not so much that they did it. It was how they did it.
Well, I thought that, besides Jameis being very efficient and not making the mistakes that he's made in the past, that everybody talks about the 30 and 30, right? 30 touchdowns, right. 30 interceptions. And that was something that he knew he had to correct and get better at, not killing himself and killing the team with mistakes. But really, I think for me, it's the defense that's so underrated. And, we lost some guys, good players, and they gave Aaron Rodgers, just a hard, hard time. He was not comfortable. He just didn't have a good day. And you can say, well, he had an off day. I would rather venture to say that the Saints defense had a really good day.
Oh, I agree. And I think, I was Deuce McAllister, talking to him before and during the game. He said, man, it'd be simple about it. It's got to be in the trenches. The Saints have to win the battle in the trenches on both sides, offensive line and defensive line. And everything else will kind of take care of itself. And, that's a tall order, but certainly they did. And
we knew the
Saints offensive line, with as strong as they've been, and they've been doing so without Eric McCoy. That defensive front, the edge rushers with Passignol and Cam Jordan and Carl Grant, all of those guys, man, it was just
beautiful.
Outstanding. Man.
Yeah, it was beautiful, and the play calling. I mean, Sean Payton is special talent as a play caller, and he's able to, I think he's just able to, whatever personnel he has, he gets the most out of it. He really does. And, I didn't think it was going to just take one game to say, well, we've moved on from Drew Brees, because you're looking at a Hall of Fame quarterback who's now, sitting in the booth there with NBC and sitting in the studio. And, it's just amazing how resilient this team is, under Sean Payton. I think they just buy into the fact that, hey, it's next man up, and it's fun to watch. It's a young team. They're aggressive. They're flying to the ball. Much more energy. You could see that. You could see that in the game from the get-go. Much, much more energy on the Saints' side of the ball, whether it was offense or defense. And you're right, the line of scrimmage absolutely dominated it there.
And it's whenever I always couch this. Whenever I say something that's going to be positive about what Jameis did, I'm not knocking Drew Brees at all. But if you look at a couple of those first quarter, second down, running out of the pocket, using his legs, he had 6 carries for 37 yards. He made 2 huge first downs with his legs. I'm not saying Drew couldn't have, but he really has not. It's not his forte, right? It just wasn't. So now you've got the same offense, but you've got a new wrinkle in the same offense.
Yeah, you have a nuance, and I think Drew would be the first to admit that. Everybody knows that Drew's a pocket passer, and so there's no shame in that. He's a Hall of Fame quarterback. He's broken. He was unbelievable. He was great. But what Winston brings you is another dimension with his legs. And as you look around the league, and you look at the Holmes and the Jacksons and these new guys coming in, and Tua and so forth. That's what this offense, that's what it's going to, this is what the league is going to, these mobile quarterbacks that are able to get first downs with their feet and still be pocket passers, but be kind of a hybrid version of that. And, it's fun to watch. There's a lot of scoring going on. There's I mean, Monday night was another great example, right?
Of,
the Raiders and the Ravens. What a fun way to start the season.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Football's back, man, and I'm happy.
Me too, baby. Fans, everything. So I'm going to couple more questions, but I'm going to get this one out of the way because it's not the happiest of them. And that's the last time I saw you, we were together on the sideline. I interviewed you for the Saints Rams NFC Championship game, right? So, I mean, it was the most electric feeling of a football game I've ever been a part of, right? On the field.
Yeah.
So, again, I'm not going to dwell on it. We know how it happened, we know how it ended. Yeah. So, I'm leaving. I'm you know, post game, I'm going to the locker room to do post game. The field's kind of empty, and I'm walking, and you were in your Hall of Fame jacket, your gold jacket, and you were sitting on the end of the Saints bench, and you had sweat from one end to your head to your toes. Your shirt was disheveled. You looked like you just played in the game. I didn't even, you looked so despondent. I said, screw it. I'm just letting him be. I'm not going to say anything because we all felt the same way. But I remember that, and I haven't seen you. I was like, that's the lowest of the low, right?
Well, it was just a it's such an emotional roller coaster ride to to be a fan, and one of the hardest things, you know, is when I stopped playing, you know, it's been a while now. You just never get used to it. You just don't get used to it because you kind of want to be out there. And you want to be in the middle of it. So, and I think if you ask Bobby Hebert, he feels the same way, and he's sweaty and he's living on every down as well. And then once you're a fan, the Saints was a that's where I grew up as a professional ball player. So I'm a Saints fan, and so when a painful loss like that happens, where you don't control it, where the referee kind of takes it from you. Well, that's really what happened. That's just hard to swallow.
So when you retired after 25, you'd played in 382 games, still an NFL record, and probably won. So Adam Vinatieri turned 48, didn't play in 2020. Got to feel like he's done. So the next guy on the list is...
He's done. He's retired.
Yeah, he's done.
But
kickers
show
are like boxers, right? I'm sorry. They're like boxers.
Done, trust me.
Come on.
Yeah, well, he's done.
Okay.
No, he's
so then,
done.
You know who's next on the list? Most games played? Brady.
I don't.
Tom Brady. So Tom Brady, you got him by 80 games right now. 382 to 302. Mm-hmm. He's got to play 4 more years and then 15 games of year 5 to eclipse you at 383. Does he do it?
Yeah. Good luck.
We say that. I'm going to have you on the show 4 years and 4.7 years from now. That record, 382.
No,
but after him, it's over, dude. It's after him, it's over.
Well,
right?
It's yours. He's phenomenal.
It's yours.
I guess. Records are made to be broken. And many of mine that I've had for a long time have been broken. So, who would have thought that Dan Marino and Manning's records would be broken?
Right.
And they're starting to fall, some of these. And Mahomes is just getting started, and he's breaking records on a weekly basis. So, it's exciting. Listen, it's the game is in great shape. Fans are back, and it's exciting, really high-level football.
And you and I have known each other a long time, and I'm just curious, when you leave Michigan State, fourth-round pick by the Saints, you come, and it's a strike year, so it's weird already, but you go 2-5 that first year, 18 of 24 the second year, 20 of 27 the third year. At that point, you're just a kid, right? I mean, worried? Were you worried at all that you might?
Oh, yeah. I was worried right off the bat after the preseason. I had a terrible preseason, and then I got hurt on the opening kickoff against the St. Louis Cardinals. Opening kick, I'm out for 8 weeks, and then the strike came. Tony Fritz was signed. He played a couple of games, and then when the strike was over, I was healthy enough to play. Tony retired. And then 83, I think I had like 3 game winners, but it's amazing now. Kickers are kicking at, I looked at Justin Tucker on Monday night, and he's like at 90, almost 91% accuracy, the most accurate guy in the league. And over 25 years, I was right at 80%. So he's 10 percentage points better, right? So
right.
It just escalates and it elevates. And It's the way that the game goes, and you can say that almost for every position.
Well, as always, that's true. You were one of the best, and by the way, since I started with the beginning, I'll start with the end. 2007, at 47 years of age, you kicked at 89.3%. It was your best. 25 of 28, 24 extra points. Always a pleasure, my friend. Good to talk to you, and we'll talk more.
Take care. Thanks.
Morton Anderson, the Great Dane. We'll have more coming up on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. And welcome back, everyone. Mike Haas here on the Saints Hour. We just had former Saint Morton Anderson. We had Mickey Loomis earlier, of course, Executive VP and GM. And now we're joined by David Hawthorne, former Saint, who played in 2012 and 13 and 14 and 15. He was also in Seattle for 4 years and very close to the Saints, probably more than ever now, as he's went to TCU. And I want to make sure I say it right. Is it Corsicana, David?
Yeah, Corsicana, Texas.
Corsicana right there in Navarro County. So you're just south of TCU and Dallas, grew up there. Now you've got some food trucks and some restaurants and barbecue that came out really, you know, pretty much. Yeah, that started kind of after you finished playing, right? You decided you were kind of, you know, where's your passion? And it was barbecue?
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up in a family of barbecue. So toward the end of my career, I ended up purchasing a few barbecue food trucks and just kind of ran them in my last days in the NFL. And when I retired, I jumped right in it.
And this, the food trucks are not just Q, right? What's the restaurant?
Yeah, so I have food trucks, not just Q. I have a hot wing kind of bar restaurant right down the street from TCU called Dirty Bones. We have a Mexican restaurant called Vedora and an American food restaurant in Dallas called Stir.
Wow.
So a bunch of restaurants.
Well, I don't know. Mickey Loomis was in earlier, and he went to your Bones restaurant and loved it. So they said they kind of snuck in and snuck out, but he hopes to see you. So what's it been like? Have you been over to see him? Have you been over to see the team, you know, since they've been in Fort Worth?
Yes, I've seen a few of the personnel guys. We're actually going up there tomorrow to feed all the guys and the staff and everybody right after practice around 2:30 or so. So I'll be on the truck with the crew working the game.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So now I'm a barbecue man myself, and I like them all. I like the, you know, to me it's all about the sauce and how you cook, you know, whether you're a North Carolina or Kansas City or, you know, Memphis. So what's the sauce like from David Hawthorne?
So we're a melting pot, actually. So
just like New Orleans.
My chef, one of the pit masters on the truck, he is a Kansas City guy through and through. And I grew up in Texas barbecue. So we just kind of did a nice combination of the two. We got a little bit of Kansas City meets Texas.
Wow. So that sounds awesome. That sounds awesome. I'm going to talk about the TCU situation in the football facility, but certainly I need to ask you the Paris Harrelson situation, just devastating. You played with him for a couple of years. I mean, I can't even imagine 37 years old, what that family's going through.
Yeah. I mean, yesterday when I heard the news, it was heartbreaking, you know, just to know a friend, a teammate, and a mentor, and a bunch of other great things. It's, you know, to hear, you know, your colleague and your brother passes away at 37, and we're all 30. You know, I'm 36, and in our whole era of guys, you know, you don't think that something like this could come so all of a sudden, but it's reality, man. And so, man, I just pray for his family, man, and a bunch of guys like me and friends and people that are hurt by this.
Yeah, our hearts and condolences go out to him and his family, everybody out there that's been tough for that organization. So you wrapped up at TCU. 2007 was your last year, right? Was your last year at TCU?
Yeah.
So the Sammy Ball,
2008, yeah.
Right, Sammy Ball indoor facility. Because I mean, I've been on the, you know, internet looking at where the Saints are, and I'm like, holy cow, look at this indoor facility and the Bob Lilly Performance Center. And they got a players lounge, like an arcade, and the practice fields and the locker rooms. And I was like, holy smokes, it's been a long time since I've been to TCU. Let's put it this way. It was part of this. They were in the Southwest Conference, if that's any idea how long it's been. But those facilities now are amazing.
Oh, man, it's ridiculous. Man, I go up there now. So I do caterings for the stadium during game days. And so I go up there now, and I just look around, and I'm kind of glad we didn't have all that stuff. We might have been a little bit distracted, but I mean, the way these coaches are and equipment people are having to go out and create these atmospheres for these players are just ridiculous. You know, it's all about recruiting. So you got to have the top of the line everything if you want to get, you know, top quality players. And TCU definitely did that with that state-of-the-art facility that they got.
And finally, and quickly, I'll be brief. You played in that 2010 Saints game with Seattle when you were with, you know, the Seahawks. You had 9 tackles in the game. And then 2 years later, that was the beast game, Marshawn Lynch, yeah. The 67-yarder. So 2 years later, you come to the Saints. How'd they react to that when you came there after that?
I think a lot of people wanted to forget that run, forget that play. And, you know, ironically, we had to go back up there for a playoff game a couple of years after I got to New Orleans. So mixed emotions all around. You know, obviously it was a good moment when I was in Seattle, but, you know, not so good for Saints family, you know, to have to relash that. But definitely both two really, really great organizations and wouldn't have traded it for the world.
Well, congratulations to you, and have a great day tomorrow, and feed them good, get them nice and, you know, full and happy, just not too happy. Got a big game on Sunday. I appreciate your time. Best of luck to you.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Former Saint David Hawthorne. We'll take a break right here on the New Orleans Saints. Welcome back to the Saints Hour. Mike Haas wrapping things up here. In case you missed our show tonight, Mickey Loomis was on, talked about, yes, the Saints are facing some COVID issues, but the quote, we will get through it. Former Saint Thomas Morstead apparently has agreed to terms with the New York Jets. He'll be there. Mickey could not confirm it, but expected wide receiver, former Saint wide receiver, Kenny Stills will rejoin the team tomorrow. Morton Anderson still has the lead at 382 games as far as the NFL record is concerned, just 80 ahead of Tom Brady. We'll wait and see on that one. It is the Saints at Carolina Sunday. Saints try to get to 2-0. My thanks to Ian Hoke, who's in the engineering booth tonight. We will see you next Tuesday night for the Saints Hour. I'm Mike Haas. Have a great night.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.